You're listening to the All Systems Go podcast, the show that teaches you everything you need to know to put your business on autopilot. Learn how to deploy automated marketing and sales systems in your business the right way with your host, the professor of automation himself and founder of Automation Bridge, Chris Davis.
Welcome to the All Systems Go podcast. I'm your host, Chris L. Davis, the founder and chief automation officer of Automation Bridge, the place online to learn about small business marketing and sales automation, where we focus on turning digital marketing professionals into automation service providers. And if you'd like to become one and find out more about becoming an automation service provider, please visit automationbridge.com/ASP. In this episode, I get to discuss a variety of important topics for marketers and course creators alike with Wes Kao. And Wes is the co-founder of Maven, the first platform for cohort-based courses. And before that, she was the co-founder of the Alt MBA with Seth Godin. And cohort-based courses are the growing trend of online courses that are both live and asynchronous, participatory, and done with a community of like-minded learners. Wes is very well decorated and has helped build courses for David Perel, Tiago Forte, Professor Scott Galloway, The Morning Brew. The list goes on and on. Wes is somebody who I would deem a friend. She is somebody that I was able to connect with at my time elsewhere, and we have just stayed connected since then. Savvy marketer, you'll hear all of my intro for her as we get into the podcast. But just know, if anything that I want you to get from this podcast is the idea and start to ideate around, could you use cohort based courses in your current business model for more growth and transformation? But before we jump into the podcast, if you're new, let me say welcome. Welcome. I'm glad that you have found the All Systems Go podcast. Again, I'm your host, Chris L. Davis, and I am personally telling you thank you for listening. Do me a favor. Listen to this episode in its entirety. At the end, if you like what you hear, which I'm sure you will, make sure you subscribe, leave a 5-star rating and review. Okay. You can subscribe to the All Systems Go podcast in Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts. You can subscribe on YouTube or wherever you get your podcast. So if you are a listener and this is not your first time and you're not subscribed, what are you waiting on? Come on, let's make it happen and let's join forces so that I can ensure that every Thursday you get a fresh new episode. And while you're at it, please, again, remember, leave your 5-star rating and review. If for whatever reason you cannot figure out how and where to do that, we've got you covered. Automationbridge.com/review. Leave your review there and we'll handle all of the heavy lifting for you. All right. Time to jump into today's episode. Wes, welcome to the podcast. I would say I'm glad to have you on, but I'm beyond that. I'm beyond glad. I'm beyond excited. Let me just say, I am extremely, with the highest level of excitement and anticipation, looking forward to this podcast. How you doing, Wes?
I'm really good. Thanks for having me on, Chris.
Yes, yes. And I have to warn my audience before we get going. I have to give a marketer's alert because I know I've told you this personally, but Wes is one of, I have a small circle of marketers who I trust. Like when they talk, I listen, you know, not in a like egotistical way, like I'm so smart, but they're just a certain level of metal and testing that somebody has to exude where I'm like, wow, they're the real deal. And Wes, you are that. So listeners, just prepare yourselves. I know you're used to taking notes on the podcast. You may need to listen to this one at like 1x speed instead of 2x because there's going to be such immense value coming. No pressure, Wes. You just show up like you are. I just want my listeners to understand there's a difference, you know. So with that being said, Wes, tell us a little bit about yourself, your background, and your business.
I'm the co-founder of Maven. We are the first cohort-based course platform. So what that is cohort-based courses are a new breed of online courses. So usually when you think online course, you think of a video-driven course, right? So you watch a bunch of videos, and we've all, at this point, probably purchased some Udemy courses, Skillshare courses. I know I have. And they're sitting gathering digital dust because I watched two videos and then said I would go back and then never did. And that's pretty common. The completion rate for most video-driven online courses is 6 to 7%. So cohort-based courses are a reaction to that. It's flipping the script and saying, what if instead of learning alone in your room by yourself, trying to watch videos, trying to stay motivated, what if we learn together with a cohort of peers, like-minded people who are excited about the same things, who nerd out about the same things, and there's a set start and end date. So over the course of 3 weeks, we learn together, or over the course of 6 weeks or 8 weeks or 2 weeks, whatever amount of time, we're focused on learning together and doing it in a much more hands-on way where there are exercises and projects, there's debating, there's discussion, there's feedback that you're giving and getting from a group. So it's much more interactive. It's much more community-based. And we're seeing this trend in the last few years towards courses of this kind. And so our platform is making it easy for anyone to create a course like this and make a living teaching what they love.
I love it. I myself, you know, run a cohort-based program. And I have to say 100% everything that you said was the reasoning why, you know, like, let's go through this together. Let's have a time. So I found that even allowing people to know, hey, this is the start, this is the end, here's the amount of time that you should, you know, set aside for the day, a schedule. This is when we meet. This, you know, just respecting people's time and making learning easy, easier and straightforward. Now, tell us a little bit about your journey to cohort based courses, because you've got a really interesting background in terms of marketing that led up to this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I'm a marketer by trade. And before starting this business, I co-founded the Alt MBA with Seth Godin. And that really kicked off the category of cohort-based learning. At the time, it was this crazy experiment. We thought, you know, could we get people together on Zoom? And could it be as transformative of an experience as when people get together in person, they're breathing the same air in the same room? So it was a crazy idea back then. It worked. And since then, we've seen a lot of other cohort-based courses pop up. So the last couple of years before starting this business, I was consulting, working one-on-one directly with clients. So I know a lot of your listeners are small business owners, freelancers, creators. So, you know, you all are near and dear to my heart because I was one of you for a couple of years. And for me, marketing, I don't remember a time when I wasn't excited about marketing, even when I didn't know what marketing was. You know, when we're kids, it's like, what do you want to be? You're like, teacher, firefighter, doctor, right? No one's like, I want to be a marketer. But as long as I can remember, I have intuitively realized that the way that you present information, the way that you tell a story, the way that you share a message or position an idea can drastically change the way that people receive that idea. And for a while, I think I fought that. I think I was, I didn't like that. I thought that you know, if we're all logical creatures, then the facts alone, the idea alone, the merit of something, the inherent merit would be enough to convince someone of whether something was a good idea or not. Yeah. And when I came to terms with and acknowledged that, you know what, that's not the case, that people are irrational. We make decisions emotionally and then we justify as fast as possible afterwards something that we already want, that we're already excited about, that we already dislike. When I came to terms with that, that's when I, like, the skies parted and it was like, yes, like this is how people make decisions. This is how customers make decisions. This is how I make decisions, right? People, you and I. And I think the more that all of us acknowledge that, the more that we realize that marketing is a lever and a powerful tool that is available to all of us. And if we stop resisting so hard and just acknowledge that it's our responsibility to get people to care, then all of a sudden this entire world opens up for you to think about, well, how can I get better at this? How can I get better at getting people to care?
Yeah. Absolutely. I would say naturally I was a marketer, but I didn't know how to do that, you know, until I was put in certain positions. And, you know, like I remember in college creating my resume, and there was a static way that you did a resume. And I remember doing it that way. And it was just like, I just don't feel like I'm getting the traction. You know, like I don't feel like I'm getting the attention. And I went against the grain. And I believe that was like my first version of copy when I realized, ooh, like, let me write this differently. And I submitted it, and I got a response within days. And that actually led to my first job at Lockheed Martin. And so at that time, if I was intentional, I would have known, like, hey, my resume is marketing. It's like a sales letter for me. You know, I am the product, and the resume is what's marketing me. I felt like I was aware of some of the elements without knowing what it was. And then, of course, when I got into the startup space, it became apparent how to harness, you know, those skills to produce results in the small business space. So Wes, you have, and we'll get more into it. You have Maven, cohort-based learning platform, the first of its kind, right? So, congratulations on that, by the way. Congratulations on that. Looking forward to you empowering course creators. And as you mentioned, you also have this exhaustive experience as a marketer. You know those pains, and you know how crowded it could be in the market and how hard it is to stand out when you feel like you're just one of the sum, right? You're just like, hey, everybody's doing it. Maybe I'll just change my logo color, you know? So you have an interesting take on how to stand out and be more memorable. You call it the spiky point of view. Can you walk us through that mindset there?
We live in a very noisy world. So whatever it is that you do, there are thousands of people who do something very similar with a similar background, similar work experience, similar skill set. So the challenge of how do you stand out is a very real challenge that all of us face. And I loved your example, Chris, of applying your copywriting skills to your resume, because a resume, the job hunt process is a great example of that. You're literally compared to thousands of other candidates, right? Who on paper look very, very similar. And consultants, specialists, everyone is really facing a similar situation. So a spiky point of view is a reaction to that. A spiky point of view is a way for you to stand out and distinguish yourself from everyone else in the sea of sameness. And so a spiky point of view is a belief that you feel strongly about and is your thesis about your realm of expertise. So it should be something that is defensible and rooted in evidence and rationale, but it's not something that has to be a proven fact. It's something that another, you know, if you're marketing, another marketer could disagree with you. Market research is a great example. So there are some marketers who believe that market research, customer development interviews are the way to get customer insights and to know what product you should build. And then there are other marketers who are the opposite. So, you know, there's that famous Henry Ford quote that we've all heard where, you know, if I had asked them, they would have said faster horses. And there's that great Ogilvy quote that we looked at the other day. Let me see if I have that somewhere.
Yes.
Let's see. Oh, yeah. So Ogilvy said, the trouble with market research is that people don't think what they feel. They don't say what they think. And they don't do what they say, right? So those are problems. So, but here you have two camps on market research that are the opposite, right? So those are examples of spiky points of view where it's not like some marketers are stupid or don't know anything. It's that they have reasons to believe based on their experience that one way is better than another. And so a spiky point of view is your way of showing that you're a rigorous thinker, that you are synthesizing your lived experiences and your work and your background and your intuition to create these ideas that that show that you think about your work and can add value to your clients. So a spiky point of view, a couple notes on it. It shouldn't be controversial for the sake of it. So it's not something that is just stirring the pot, a hot take to get people riled up. It should be something that you really believe is the best way. And so a lot of times that comes across as, I wish more people knew this, or I don't know why people don't get this thing yet. Right. Or I can't believe more people don't think about things this way. So the ideal reaction when you share your spiky point of view is that someone says, huh, I hadn't thought about it that way.
Yes.
But I believe you. And that's interesting.
Yes. And Wes, I'm trying not to get too excited. As you're saying that, another byproduct of it is the positioning. When you have a really strong spiky point of view that people are like, it positions you higher because you're the one that brought it to the table. Right. Like, yes. For me, there's a couple spiky point of views that I've used to position myself. And one was at a time where everybody in digital marketing was all about the best tool. Buy this. Ooh, did you catch this sale? Oh, look at what you can do with this tool. Everything was focused on the tool. I came in with the spiky point of view that strategy should precede you picking a tool. And people were like,
right? That's amazing. Great example of a spiky point of view. Yep. And it's not that the people who think about tools are wrong. It's that from your experience, you believe that it's overrated. Yes. And that the strategy is underrated. And here's why, right? And then you can explain why. And the beautiful thing about that is it takes a certain level of confidence to present a spiky point of view. Right? Because you could get kicked out of the room. That is something that if we think about why don't more people share spiky points of view? Well, it's because going against the grain can be a little bit scary, right? The hordes, the mob could come after you, right? And say, Chris, you clearly don't understand tools if you're saying something like that, right? And so when you present a spiky point of view, you're exposing yourself in a certain way. You're putting yourself out there. But that's what you need to do to be able to stand out. So there's a little bit of an edge. There's a little bit of risk that comes along with being willing to share something you really believe in. But the payoff of that is incredible, you know, and it's either you stick with the crowd and you kind of blend in and you keep your spiky points of view to yourself and no one ever knows about them, or you take a risk, you open yourself to being a little bit bold and share that point of view, and you then become a beacon for all the other people who had this hunch, right? They had a hunch that tools probably aren't going to solve everything, but it sounds like everyone cares about tools. So maybe I'm missing something, right? So maybe that's what they're thinking. And here comes, here you come, right? Saying that tools are overrated, strategy needs to be more front and center. And you become a beacon for everyone who thinks this way to flock to you, to want to learn more, to want to learn your way of automation, not just any way of automation, but your unique way.
Yes, yes, absolutely. And to your definition of it, it's defensible. I can show why I'm saying what I'm saying. I'm not just out here splurting something to get your attention. That's what entertainers do, right? We when I was growing up, they called them battle rappers, and they would come out and just write a whole verse against another more well-known rapper just to get attention, right? It's not that. We're not seeking attention. We don't want all the likes and everything because we said something nice or something controversial or, whatnot. We're introducing a point of view that is uncommon, but once heard, will resonate with a particular audience, and we can provide evidence in why we feel that way.
Exactly. It's if you think about a Venn diagram with two circles, it's surprising and true. Mm. So the spiky point of view is that overlap. If it's just surprising, you're a tabloid article, you're a BuzzFeed article, listicle, right? Not even an article, listicle, right?
Yeah,
you're just out there trying to get attention. And if it's just true, then it's a fact. It's something everyone already knows. There's nothing fresh or new about it. But it's really that overlap of surprising and true that is your fresh take that is defensible, that's rooted in experience and evidence and rationale. But still challenges your audience to think in a different way and see their world in a different way through that lens.
Yeah, Yeah. And it does it. It's refreshing in a sense because it's yours. Right. When I look at the spiky point of view, I'm always thinking about how to apply it to the what and the how. Right. Like this, we do things this way. And this is what we do. And in a market where everybody's going this way, just a slight tweak. Say, hey, well, actually, we measure every single thing that we do and we calculate how that impacted your business. Right. When no one else is doing it, everyone else is just like, hey, pay us. And I want to make this point because I have an audience of marketing automation consultants, and it is so. Wes, I can't tell you how easy it is to just kind of use a templatized approach, do what everybody else is doing in the market, because most of the market will respond to that. But there gets a point where it's just like, okay, how do I stand? How do I get the true value? Because I'm smarter. I'm more seasoned. I've got more experience, but I'm just in this crowd. I'm just flooded around. And sometimes it's the difference of you just being willing to get the courage and create. I shouldn't say create. I should say state more loudly your spiky point of view. And a lot of people, that imposter syndrome comes in and steals their confidence and steals that entire mindset of being willing to do it, because they keep trying to be something else or present themselves as something else instead of owning it and saying, hey, look, this is what I believe. This is what we do, which actually, Wes, is a good segue. I want to jump ahead here. It's a good segue into your article that you wrote. Technical in nature, but it applies so strongly to us as human beings and how we show up in the world. And it was entitled "Turn Bugs into Features." And you share with me a very interesting take on that. I know you're going to update the article on how we can take that approach personally and make that correlation for our audience on how that ties into the spiky point of view of standing out and presenting yourself with confidence.
Mm-hmm. We spend so much time looking at other people, looking at other competitors, brands, peers, and wishing we were more like them, wishing, well, if I had that, then I would be able to do this. Or, oh, I wish I were less of an introvert and more of an extrovert. Or I wish I had this skill set or this background. And whenever you start to feel sorry for yourself and start to think like, oh, I need to gloss over this aspect of my personality. I need to gloss over this aspect of my background. Think about turning the bug into a feature. And what that means is anything that is a downside, a pitfall, a disadvantage, a thing that you wish weren't the case about your background or skill set, flip that around and think about, what if I emphasize this and made it a selling point? What if my being an introvert, instead of it being a bad thing, it was a great thing? What if that is what allows me to serve my clients even better than all the other people out there who are extroverts? So this is a mental hack to get yourself to think about what are things that you now perceive as weaknesses that are actually strengths. Because if you think about it, you got to where you are today because of your unique package, combination of strengths and weaknesses. And I always think about strengths and weaknesses as two sides of the same coin. So it's a trait. And when it's applied in the right situations in the right way, it's a strength. When it's applied in the wrong ways, wrong situation, or too much, right? Severity-wise, it's too much, or you can't turn it off, then it becomes a weakness. But there's nothing inherently bad or wrong or something that you need to gloss over about your background or the way that you approach work. And I think one good example of this is, let's say you're an automation specialist and you're a perfectionist. So you might think like, oh, I wish I could ship faster. I wish I wasn't so hung up on all the details. Like I see so-and-so over there and so-and-so over there. They're just shipping stuff. They're thinking of an idea, tweeting it out or shipping it. And instead of kicking yourself about that, what if you turned it into a strength? And you sold that as a strength to your clients and said, you know, I'm a perfectionist, so I'm not going to let things fall through the cracks. I'm high strung AF and I'm not going to let details slide, right? You want someone who's a perfectionist working on your automation because it's complex. There are a lot of parts that all have to join together. You have to think about second order effects, right? So the fact that you are a perfectionist and a logical thinker and you're obsessed is a good thing, right? So stop thinking about it as a bad thing, turn it into a feature. Yeah. And then let's try it the other way, right? So truly, we're going to flip that now. So let's say you're the opposite of that. You are not a perfectionist. You're not really good with details. You're kind of a big picture thinker. You're more chill vibe-wise, right? Maybe your spiky point of view is that, you know, people are too stressed about making automation perfect, right? And so your stance is that automation, like building anything new, is an iterative process. You have to get V1 out the door to get to V2, to get to V3, to get to V4, and to whatever eventual automation that you want to get to. But getting started and not being afraid to set up that initial automation, make it small, keep it small, and not being too serious about it is important, right? So here we have two opposite views, and both people could have been wishing they were the other, beating themselves up about how they wish they were more of a perfectionist or wish they were, able to ship faster and be more chill. So turning a bug into a feature is basically this great mental hack where you embrace all the things about yourself. The minute you feel yourself starting to spiral, starting to feel sorry for yourself, you pause and you think about, what if I turned this into a selling point? I aggrandized it instead of trying to gloss it over. And in doing so, a lot of times by the end of thinking about it, you've convinced yourself that, you know what, like, this is great. I'm great. There is a reason I approach things this way. And I bring all of that to my clients, and my clients get to benefit from the way that I think.
Yep. And it's all connected, right? Like when you own you, right? And when you're confident in you and you say, no, this person, this industry may view that as a flaw, but this trait is valuable to this industry, and you operate in that industry, you'll see how operating in that, the spiky point of views start to just become apparent. You're like, well, now that I know I am detail oriented, and I know I'm not the person, I'm not impulsive, so I'm not going to act quickly. So I'm going to give it thorough thought. And this fast moving company is lacking that. And I bring stability. So now that I do that and I'm empowered myself in who I am, my traits are strengths. Now I'm okay with being different, with having a different point of view, because I could defend it, right? Because of how I'm deciding to show up. And Wes, as much tactical that we see marketing being, it's all about building a landing page and high conversion this and revenue that and MRR, ARR. These are things that sneak in and hinder your growth, right? These are things where I call them the invisible stumbling blocks, because these are the things that you keep tripping over. You don't realize they're there, but you keep finding yourself on the ground. Like, how do I know how to walk? In fact, I know how to run. How do I keep falling? And it's this mindset stuff as a marketer that is so haphazardly glossed over today. And a lot of the questions that I get from people who either I mentor or are just in communication with, I'm like, you know what? That's not a conversion problem. That's not a marketing problem. That's not even a revenue issue. Honestly, that's mindset stuff. That is straight mindset stuff. Somewhere you're not giving yourself permission to operate in your true identity, like who you truly are, and turning those hangups or traits, whatever somebody else wants to call them, into strengths. That's your job to communicate that. You cannot wait for someone else to say, hey, you know what? I see you've been down on yourself, but you're really good at this. Don't let them talk about you negatively. If you don't own it and you don't exude it, it's not going to exist consistently for longevity in the marketplace. So I love those two. And I'm glad you spoke on them, because again, I see a lot of marketing automation consultants really struggling, like, how do I position myself as if the market is flooded with automation consultants that know what they're doing? It's not. So an easy spiky point of view for a lot of them is to just talk about results. Everybody's talking about, hey, you can automate this. Why don't you give somebody some detail into the results that you get for your clients and talk about your how? Just why don't you lead with that, right? Instead of trying to just take some templates and, oh, this person is doing that and they're charging this, so I'm going to charge it. And I had a podcast. I can't remember when I recorded this, but it was with Michael Hunter of Spiffy. And we were talking about providing an excellent service. And I told him, I said, you know, it's only when you provide an excellent service that you can trust the results that you got, right? And you know, these are the strongest results that I produce when I do that. And the problem is a lot of people just don't strive for that level of excellence, because excellence does not always equate to getting paid more, does not always equate to making more. That's an internal thing. That's you knowing I showed up at 110%. So at the end of the day, when you look at that result, you know that that was the best. That was the best that you could produce. And that's yours. And you can own it and become intimate with those results and then start to communicate that outwardly. So there is no, with most things in marketing, right? There is no one answer. There is no, hey, do this. Hey, how do I position myself differently? Oh, sure. Just go post on Facebook every day. Then make sure you write a LinkedIn article and then record videos. You'll be positioned perfectly. No, there's a whole lot of mental and mentality stuff that you have to work through and get your confidence. You know, like Wes, I've been attacked online by many, right? But it comes, and guess what? It goes. I am for who I'm for. Some people hear, and the second they listen, they're like, oh, who is this guy? I've got to find more. And then other people listen, and they're like, what a joke. Right? I could care less. I really could, because I'm authentic. I can defend my points of views and my results speak for themselves.
Mm-hmm. I think the fact that you're polarizing is a sign that you're doing something right.
Yes.
If everyone agreed with you, you are way too middle of the road. Edges are way too rounded. So people disagreeing with you is a good thing. And I think there is a certain mindset and level of internal groundedness that you need to have to be okay with people disagreeing with you. I still struggle with this. I struggled with this more in the past, and I've gradually come to terms with it more. Mm-hmm. But before I used to really dislike when someone disagreed with something that I said. And then it's pretty much, that is going to prevent you from sharing anything, right? Because there is always going to be someone who disagrees with you, especially if you're tweeting something, right? In 280 characters, come on. Like, there's not enough nuance to describe the edge cases and boundaries of an idea, the outliers, and the disclaimers that you want to say with everything, right? Like, if you know something well, you know that when you are saying something, there's not enough detail in it in a very short tweet to be able to say the full idea. And I used to get really bothered by people, you know, then commenting and disagreeing. And now I just like everyone's comment. If they disagree with it, that's great, right? I like that they're thinking, right? Whatever I said got them to think, and that's awesome. And I think that as marketers, as consultants, as business owners, we have to be okay with people disagreeing with us and not being for everyone.
Yep. It's perfectly fine. And I had one last thing, and I want to jump into some Maven stuff. I made a mistake on LinkedIn the other day. And on LinkedIn, when you get notifications, you can say, like, show less of this type of notification, because it was notifying me of everything. Somebody posted, somebody got a job. And I'm just like, OK, too much, you know. So I was one by one removing the notifications, and I must have removed the wrong one, because all of my notifications disappeared. So I wasn't getting notified of anything because I would like to get notified when someone likes my stuff or, you know, follows me or whatever. Right. But I was too lazy to go into my notifications and figure out how to turn it back on. Well, Wes, after a few days, I found a level of comfort in it because oftentimes just unknown, subconsciously, you go and you measure the value of what you're saying.
Yes.
By the amount of likes and everything.
Yes.
And I couldn't see any of it. And I was like, this is really how you should produce content. Like, don't get high on the likes and don't get low on the lack of them, but just produce what you know is valuable and let it live. Let it breathe and let it exist. And don't feed into that the drug of social approval.
Yeah, I love that you brought this up. I think there's such an interesting tension here because on the one hand, when you're sharing your ideas, it's a creative process.
Yeah.
Right. It's creative work. And you want to speak your truth. And then on the other hand, you also want to know what engages people and what they find useful. But I think the challenge is that most of us spend way too much trying to guess what people would like and then getting stressed when something doesn't perform as well or doesn't get as many likes as you think it will. And then we get really reactive. So I tweeted something yesterday. I was laughing when you were saying that because this literally happened to me yesterday. I tweeted something that I thought was pretty insightful, you know, and it performed worse than my average tweet. So I thought that was interesting. Yeah. And I felt this temptation to then be like, oh, well, maybe that wasn't an interesting idea, right? Or, you know, or maybe I didn't phrase it well or whatever. And it's like, there are all kinds of reasons why that might not have landed. And I looked at it and I realized that I could have tweaked something. If I were to adjust the copy, I would do it differently. Mm. But there's nothing, it wasn't like the original idea was bad or like, you know, not smart or anything. And so for me, it's balancing this feeling of equanimity where it's like, okay, I do want to know what people are finding useful, but I don't want to get sucked into pandering or being overly reactive too soon from one data point.
Yeah.
You know, it could have been the time of day. It could have been, you know, the phrasing. It could have been just anything. There's so many variables. If there are trends over time that this kind of thing is more useful for people, this kind of thing is less useful for people, I do want to know that. But I agree with you that the minute by minute notifications and alerts of whether people are liking something is utterly unhelpful. It is, yeah. It's so unhelpful. And I think it pulls us into too much of a reactive, into a reactive state. So I completely hear you. I try not to check, you know, notification. I have all my notifications turned off. That's one thing. So all my notifications, push notifications are turned off. And I try to check Twitter, you know, only a couple times a day. So not like every hour, I don't know, maybe a couple times is a lot for some people, but, you know, I don't check every hour, you know, and constantly refresh, because I don't want that to direct my content or my thinking, too much, I should say.
Yeah, it's a dichotomy, right? We have to, it's as marketers, you need data to make decisions, right? So on one hand, we love the data. What are people saying? What are they doing? And then on the other hand, it's just like, oh, wait a minute. If I drink that same juice over here, I'll get drunk and I'll start making terrible decisions. So it's good in this aspect. Okay, I want to see the trends, Wes. I really do. I am so nervous to make a firm decision without data. You know, just experience has taught me better. I'm not a trust your gut. No, I'm just not that type of person. I want to look at historical data.
And that's a feature, not a bug.
That's a feature. And everybody knows, Chris, don't you look for my gut. Give me some numbers because my gut is saying something, but it doesn't have a voice until I see some numbers. And I get that. So I love data in that respect. But then on the other side, it can really be detrimental. You know, if you're creating content and your main thing, and I learned this actually when I was doing art, when I was producing art and I was publishing it online, And at some, there were some pieces that I would draw. I was drawing characters. I'm like, man, that looks just like the person. And the person would hate it. They'd be like, this is terrible. And I'm like, do you look in a mirror every day? Like, what are you seeing? And then other pieces I would create, and it would be like, oh, I really missed it on that one. And they'd be like, this is great. Can you draw my whole family? And I was always stuck. I would, before I drew something, I felt paralyzed, Wes, because I'm like, I hope they'll like it. But what if I draw the nose too big? And then I had to come to myself and say, listen, my art is great because I said it is. It's not great because they said it is. And it's not terrible because they said it is. I have to be confident in myself, what I'm putting out there, and not lean and live off the opinions and feedback of others. So it is this balance because we can't ignore it.
Such a good example.
Right. It is what it is. But I think when you say balance, that's what brings it all in. It's like, okay, I'm leaning a little too much on these likes. Let me lighten up some. Okay, I'm not looking at the data enough. Let me look at it. So I love it. And speaking of data, I want to close out on this. I want to talk more about Maven. Because and here's why, Wes. I have a community that is listening right now of consultants that work for coaches. And these coaches probably have never heard or never thought of turning this course that they have into a more cohort based approach to it, as well as people who create programs for themselves and do the automation for themselves that could benefit from a cohort based approach. So I wanted to give you the floor before we close out and talk about some of the common mistakes that you've seen people make when they approaching, you know, creating courses and some of the trends that you all are seeing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'll start with trends. So one of the trends that I'm seeing in education is people are wanting to learn in a more interactive way. Mm. So one directional content, just reading articles by yourself, just watching videos of a sage on stage expert mm-hmm. talking about something is not enough and it's not engaging. Especially with COVID and with Zoom, more people are realizing that learning live, meeting people online, connecting with people online is a really engaging way to challenge themselves and build relationships and learn with a community. And so I think that's really exciting for coaches, for consultants who have a lot of knowledge to share with their audience.
Yeah.
And might not have a place where they can teach it in a bi-directional way. So bi-directional meaning your audience can ask you questions. They can debate amongst each other. They can debate with you. You can give them exercises and activities and projects for them to put into practice the things that you're teaching them. So this is really, really powerful, especially with coaches where, you know, if all it took were reading a book on something, then these coaches wouldn't exist, right? We wouldn't need these coaches. It's the act of being present with someone and that back and forth interaction that sparks ideas in us. So especially with coaches, I think there's a really interesting opportunity here to think about what course can I put together to teach my audience all the things that I preach and care about and believe will improve their lives? And how can I do it in a way that is interactive, where maybe you get a group of 20 people together, 50 people, maybe 100, and it could be a 1-week course or a 3-week course. And you go through different mindset shifts or different frameworks or mental models. And instead of just you teaching it in a one directional way, yeah. you share those models and those ideas and mindsets with everyone. And then everyone gets a chance to practice with your oversight and with your guidance. So you can see if they're applying it in the wrong way, right? You can see if they took the wrong lesson from something. That happens a lot, right? All of us, when we explain concepts and someone's like, oh, I get it. And they do something, they bring it back to you. And you're like, actually, like that's literally the opposite of what I meant. But I can see now that the way I described it, that you could have interpreted it that way, right? And so when you are in a course, you have a chance to help your students course correct, to help your clients course correct. Mm-hmm. So it's a really powerful way to add another product to your repertoire of, you know, ways of making revenue. If it's consulting, coaching, maybe you're selling eBooks or selling a video-driven course, selling a cohort-based course is a premium product that you can add to your the range of services and products that you offer.
Yeah, and it another thing is it garners community. You know,
yes,
entrepreneurship, as exciting and fulfilling as it can be, is there's always a level of loneliness. You know, always, even if you have a company, you as the owner and operator, CEO, you can't always connect with your employees the way that you truly need to. You need other CEOs. You need other people on your level. And we see those impacts at every level of entrepreneurship. And I think that people have really undervalued the power of community because it has more than just this quantifiable value where you can say, okay, now that I'm in this community, these and these things happen, or I learned these things, right? I can quantify that. But there's also the intangibles where maybe you've got some mental mess going on and somebody says something that inspires you, right? Or you read of somebody's success that they posted because they went through lesson one the same way you did, but look at how they applied it. I hadn't thought of that. And as an instructor, Wes, it takes the load off of us to be the sole educator, the sole light bulb turn oner, you know, if that's a phrase, the sole person to solve your problems. And now this community comes in, and as they learn, the quality of that brain trust increases. So yeah. As we're going through this together, you actually get more from going through it with a group than you would on your own.
Absolutely. I love what you said about the intangible aspects. Yeah. So feeling inspired by seeing someone else who's in a similar place achieve something. Feeling seen and heard because someone else is going through a similar challenge and you thought you were the only one dealing with something, and it turns out that it's more common than you thought. Yeah. Being able to share with people who care and have a similar experience, right? Like all of those things are intangibles, but make an experience so much more special and make learning actually possible. You know, learning isn't just facts and knowledge and information. It's really about behavior change. And behavior change isn't something that you can just will yourself to, at least most of us, you know, it's not. Yeah. Having that inspiration, having like-minded people who are going through something similar, learning together, being inspired, feeling accountable, holding other people accountable, right? Not just, hey, they're here making sure I show up, but I'm here making sure they show up. Like that changes you too, when you are helping someone else be accountable. So from the student side, from the instructor side, there's so many benefits of getting a group of people together who are, I like calling it weird in the same ways and nerding out about the same things, right? About automation. Like most people don't care about automation, just to be clear. Yep. Like 99% of people don't. Yep. But the 1% who do, that's awesome, right? Like getting those people together so you can nerd out about the same things and have this little world, this little universe, where you can challenge each other and really dive deeper than you normally otherwise be able to, I think is such an incredible, priceless experience.
Yeah. Yeah. So I love your new company that you founded. I love the angle, and I love that it's providing, I think it's ahead of its time. Right. The market definitely hasn't caught up, but now they have a means of catching up to these resources and this way of doing learning, you know, online that is truly transformational and collaborative. So I was always a cheerleader of yours, you know, from the sidelines. So I get to cheer even louder just to see your growth and your progression is great, Wes. So for anybody listening to this podcast and was like, oh, my goodness, I need more of her and what she's talking about. Where should we send them?
My website is wesko.com. And I write a newsletter about once a month, diving into a lot of the topics that we talked about today. And then my company's website is maven.com. So you can learn more about courses, how to start your own course, how to use our platform on maven.com.
Great. So we'll have both of those links, everybody. That's Wesko, WESKAO.com. If you're on your phone and you're like, I can't wait, go there, and Maven, MAVEN.com for the platform. Wes, thank you.
Thanks so much, Chris. I always love our conversations. Enjoyable. You know that. So
yes,
thank you so much for having me on.
You know what's good about this is everybody else got to partake. You know, we've had so many conversations. We're like, my gosh, and the light bulb's going for us. And now we get to share that experience. So thank you so much, Wes. I appreciate it. And I look forward to getting this into the ears of our viewers.
Thanks, Chris.
Thank you for listening to this episode. Did you enjoy Wes? Did you enjoy her insight and her intelligence around positioning and standing out in the market? I have to say that, again, a lot of the things that you desire, a lot of your frustrations that you may have in business right now is founded in some lack of mentality or embodiment of a stronger mindset or mentality. And the marketing tactics and strategies have gotten too much of the focus. Right. So I love discussing that. And by the way, we're going to link to all of those articles. We talked about three of them on this podcast that Wes has written. We're going to link to those in the show notes. And then lastly, I hope it's clear to you what cohort based courses are. And hopefully you can start to see how they could play a role in your current business models. For some of you, this may have been the missing piece. This may have been the missing piece. I hope that is the case for you. So if you are connected with somebody that you know has online courses, make sure you share this podcast with them. Also, if you are connected with a marketer or a digital marketing professional or a community of digital marketing professionals, do me a favor. Share this episode of the podcast in that group, so that they can listen to this and understand how to more strongly position themselves through their spiky point of view and turning their traits into strengths. If you enjoyed today's episode, this is my time for you first time visitors. This is the time for you first time visitors to get my official invitation now. Now, if you haven't already, now is the time to subscribe. Hit subscribe in the app that you're listening to this podcast in, and make sure you leave a 5-star rating and review. I welcome you. I welcome you to the All Systems Go family. Every Thursday, a fresh new episode comes delivered directly to your podcasting platform. Here at Automation Bridge, we're dedicated to training digital marketing professionals to become automation service providers. These are people who create a living, a lucrative living, taking strategy, being strategic in marketing, and understanding the technological landscape of software available to aid in executing that marketing strategy and building a system to do that for these small businesses so that they can experience rapid growth. Okay, if that's you, that description that I just said, if you feel like your name should be right, your face should be right next to it, just smiling like, that's me, I want to invite you to go to automationbridge.com/ASP to take the next steps to talk to someone on my team or myself to assess if you'd be a good fit for any of our current program offerings. But most importantly, our automation service provider program that it gives you a proven structured framework to work through and learn. And guess what? It is cohort based. So you're connected with other digital marketing professionals along the way to collaborate and have the feedback and the higher brain trust that Wes described on this podcast. If that's you, we do have a program for you digital marketing professionals to become an automation service provider. Also, we're accepting guests for the podcast. So if you're a SaaS founder like Wes of a marketing or sales software platform, we would love to discuss your software and your journey. You can't tell me you all have not been enjoying these CEO interviews and founder interviews. They're great. And a lot of them, you know, since they were marketers too, you get to see both sides. But Now, I will say this is not just limited to founders. We're also taking marketing automation consultants who are in the field delivering the service of automation and experiencing any level of success with your clients. Right. The larger, the better. And you like to come on and share your collective results. You share your results with the collective audience. Founders and marketing automation consultants, go to automationbridge.com/guest. The time is now to help these small businesses navigate this digital space. Okay. Help them navigate this digital space with respect to automation so that they can achieve the scale and the insurance that their business truly deserves. Okay. I don't want to do this alone. I'm not doing it alone. And I would love for you to join forces and see what you could do with a career in automation. All right. So again, if that's you, go to automationbridge.com/ASP. All of the show notes and podcasts are accessible at automationbridge.com/podcast. You can subscribe there and listen to all the other episodes at your leisure. So until next time, I see you online. Automate responsibly, my friends.